Today's program is brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, a sustainable pasture-based dairy farm. For more information, visit considerbardwellfarm.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Well, hello and welcome to Chef's Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and we are broadcasting from the International Culinary Center. So you might hear some of our old radiators in the background. But today we have a special guest from Atlanta, Georgia, Billy Allen of Cakes and Ale and many other restaurants down there. You're building an empire. You have Cakes and Ale Restaurant, Cafe of Cakes and Ale, Bread and Butterfly, and Proof Bake Shop. We're going to hear all about that. Welcome, Billy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I understand you were born in New York, but you deserted us for South Carolina. Tell us about your background and where you grew up and how you got to South Carolina.
All right. I was born in New York, lived, I believe, till around 1979 in Roslyn. So not the Roslyn of now, but the Roslyn of the past. Best bagels you could ever eat, and I do remember that. Then we moved to Jacksonville, Florida, and were there for a few years, and then Greenwood, South Carolina, small town in upstate South Carolina.
So what age were you when you went down to Florida?
I was 7, and then we moved to Jacksonville when I was 9.
Now that is interesting. You have food memories of bagels before 7 years old.
No, I can remember things so far in the past, but I can't remember my kids' names on certain days.
Okay.
Maybe that's how strong food memories are.
So what other food memories do you have from that era?
I always said a lot of what came to me was through my Italian side of my family, my mom's side. And I do have those food memories, big family feasts together at the aunt's house or my grandmother's house, and in particular them pulling a whole chicken or hen out of a pot of tomato sauce. And, you know, I can remember eating that. I remember how delicious it was. And I remember the kids ate first, then all the everybody else, and then the grandparents and aunts. Or the grandmothers and aunts ate last. They stayed in the kitchen. They argued about the dinner, what they were doing. And I can remember it like it's yesterday. And I think that gets back to, you know, this eating is about getting together and sharing moments. And those moments I remember well. I remember going to eat at good restaurants, you know, after that, in New York a lot, coming back to New York, as far back as I can remember, shortly after we moved, going to the Quilted Giraffe and, you know,
wow,
these old
school
French
really
restaurants. You know,
yeah.
We were very lucky in life that we could eat at those places. I think that was in Jacksonville, not as much, but when we moved to South Carolina and we'd come back for see family or my father's business trips, whatever it was.
Well, wow, Quilted Giraffe is right up there. That
yeah.
was.
I have a. One of the last menus I ever printed, we have half of it framed on our wall at the restaurant that my dad got on a trip up there. He went by and said, hey, this is some place that we loved going and ate. It sounds like we went all the time, but enough times. And they said, yeah, have a menu. So we framed it. It's on the hallway.
So you came from a family that respected food and ate good food, and not just in restaurants, but with family.
We cooked at home all the time, from the young, you know, through my college age. We did cook at home a lot. We ate together. We ate family meals together, and just good memories. That's what, to me, eating is about: is getting together, eating, talking about the day, talking about whatever it is.
So what was life growing up like in Jacksonville and in Greenwood?
Greenwood, yeah.
Yeah.
Jacksonville, it was a naval city at the time. It still kind of is. So my neighborhood was very transient, where my dad moved from Bank of New York up here to bank in Jacksonville, and we were one of the few families in the neighborhood that wasn't transient from the Navy. You know, so I remember, I guess there's no culinary memories. I remember going to someone's house, a friend's house, and looking, and they're gone. Moving trucks came, they got them. They were transferred. It happened really fast sometimes.
So these would be your friends that you went to school with, and then poof, they disappeared?
Yeah, a lot of them. I went to St. Paul's Catholic school there, and not all of them went there, and they were just acquaintances. But, you know, every 6 months, sometimes new people would come in, and at that age, you just become friends, you know? It's like, it's instantaneous. You know, we're riding big wheels, and we do a crash-up derby, and next thing you know, you have a best friend on your hand.
Right.
right. You know, so there was, such a short time. Greenwood, South Carolina, we ended up there, a very small town, a very southern town at the time, a mill town, but the mills were going one direction. But luckily, the city had worked, had planned on that, so it didn't become a non-existent small city. It kind of stayed relevant, you know, though it hasn't grown much since I've left.
So what age were you when you moved up to South Carolina?
We moved there when I was 9.
Yeah.
And then, or 10, 9 or 10. And we lived there through my college years, and then everyone kind of went their own ways. I graduated college and got married, and my sister was already, had moved back to New York.
So when you got to college, did you study English literature by any chance?
I studied, economics major.
You're an economics major. What were you thinking you were going to do?
I had no clue, unfortunately, at the time. I knew I liked cooking. I'll tell you, I loved cooking. I watched every TV show you could imagine.
What were your favorite TV shows?
Great Chef series by far.
Oh, yeah.
Loved them. I still have the books. I have the Great Chefs of New Orleans, Great Chefs of Chicago, actually New Orleans 1 and 2, Great Chefs of Chicago, Great Chefs of New York, like those, I think that may be the whole set, can't remember, but we ordered them because I loved it, and that was a Christmas present 1 year.
What was the most complex thing you'd cook?
I think I've told this story before. I mean, we at home we would do meals together, but family meal type things, but I loved cooking breakfast, so taking breakfast and not making it just breakfast, you know, not just eggs with bacon, like eggs with toast and bacon and a big salad or hollandaise, and I would make those things. So breakfast for dinner was a huge thing in our family, and I liked doing it, and I would do it different ways, especially, you know, junior high to high school. But I started cooking when we moved there. I think I got a job in our neighborhood club as a Sunday server, I think in seventh or eighth grade, and I would always go in early on Sunday and cook with the ladies that were making the chicken and macaroni and cheese, and I would just hang out with them and watch them and bread chicken. I mean, and you're talking, you know, hundreds of pounds of chicken for a Sunday brunch, and I loved doing it, and then I'd serve people really with just pouring sweet tea. That was the service.
So your father was a banker?
He was in investments and in banking. He sold, he actually did two things. He started trying to go to law, or he was going to law school, and then my sister was born unexpectedly, we'll say, and it just was getting too hard. So he went into banking for Bank of New York, and he sold Electrolux vacuums at the same time. You know, so I always tell my staff, you know, it's about what you know, but really about how hard you work. And I do believe that came from that. I mean, he was full-time Electrolux vacuums from 5:30 or 6 at night until people would quit accepting them at their door. Up on the train from Long Island to New York, you know, at 5:30 in the morning. I don't remember that as in a visual, but I know it was difficult, you know, just the conversations we've had, you know, not very different, difficult than some people have, but he wasn't there a lot. It was a lot of hard work, but it paid off, you know, and so through that, I think, you know, maybe innately, you know, part of what we do in a restaurant is work hard. It's very important that you work hard, that it's tedious, but the payoff is we enjoy what we're doing. People enjoy it. We make new friends. So anyway, I don't know where we were in the story. Oh, Greenwood. I'd cook. I cooked.
Well, no, I was asking you about your father because did he want you to study economics?
That was a question. They're good parents. They didn't care. I mean,
parents. They cared, but they allowed you to be your person.
We could be my person. They didn't care if I chose what path I chose.
Right.
They just wanted me, my dad especially, to choose a path and follow it.
Yes.
Don't choose it and go, maybe not. Maybe not. He said, choose what you want to do and do it. But I didn't know, so I chose economics. Though I cooked and I cooked and I cooked. When I went to College of Charleston, I visited the culinary school there a few times and was like, maybe I should quit this and go to culinary. At the time, it was Johnson and Wales was in Charleston. But I was like, nah, I'm on the path. I'm going to do economics, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It wasn't the subject matter that I wasn't excited in any way. It was, I wonder if I should be a cook. Like, was that what I was supposed to
do? It was always in the back of your mind.
It's always there. But I didn't, so I did economics, and I started in investments when I graduated. And then,
what kind of job did you have?
I did investments portfolio management for 1 year in South Carolina. Then my wife and I were married. Kristen and I got married. We had met. She was at Georgia Tech, an engineer, and I was College of Charleston, and we met through her cousin, who was one of my better friends, and she introduced us, and we dated for 3 years and were married, and then she moved to Greenwood, which was not in her mind of the best thing in life to do, but she kind of sucked it up and did it for a year, and then her job took us to San Francisco.
Oh.
And that was kind of where...
A big turning point in your life.
Yeah, it was big. So we left. Her job took
us
there.
So she had an engineering job?
Yep, she's an engineer, an industrial engineer.
So how exciting. So what year were you in San Francisco?
When did we go? 1998, I think.
1998, yeah.
So I worked in investments. No job when I got there. I was telling a story earlier. I went there fully fed, you know, fit in my body a lot. But when you're in San Francisco, you walk and you walk and you walk and you walk up big hills. And for the first month, I didn't have a job because I went out there with Kristen's job. And I lost a ton of weight because I was like, well, if I eat food, I'm spending money. We don't have the money. We have this rent, and people would laugh now of $1,600 a month. And I was like, oh, my God, because we left Greenwood, and we had a two-bedroom, two-bath house for $600. And this was a one-bedroom, small, about the size of this room, whole apartment for $1,600, actually $1,635, because it was originally $1,695, and I talked the landlord
down. Why did you move out there? I know she had a job.
Her company said, you're too good at what you do. You can't stay at the plant in Greenwood where you have Chicago, Pittsburgh, or San Francisco. Those are the three openings, and you have to choose one to stay with the company, you know. So I was like, well, why are they strong-arming you if you're so good? But they're like, this is good for you, you know, her career. And mine, it was time to just go ahead and do something new, you know, just try it. So I did finally get a job after a month. And but the whole time I probably went to the culinary school there 10 times from the time we moved there till I finally quit
Starting.
My job. And
well, that's a big decision to leave a paying job and to jump into
jobs. You know, we were having a fun time. We were 25 years old on our own.
Were you eating in a lot of restaurants after you?
Everywhere.
What were the restaurants back then that drew you in?
Let's see. We moved out there, and Kristen was a vegetarian at the time. She shocked me. This is kind of funny. I was doing a license exam in Charlotte, North Carolina, and she drove up to spend the last Saturday before Friday before my exam. I'd been up there a week doing all the preparation for it, and I was like, oh, we'll go out to dinner, and we went to P.F. Chang's. It's about the only place around where we were to go, and I was like, we'll get this, we eat this, we eat this. She goes, well, no, actually, I can't. I'm a vegetarian. I was like, well, okay, this is new. And she's like, I'm a vegetarian. I was like, okay, well, we'll get this, this, and this, whatever. So one of the first meals we had there, when a decent meal was at Millennium, a vegetarian restaurant, very well known at the time. And I never knew vegetarian food could be so good. Like, I mean, vegetarian food to me was a salad at the time.
Right.
You know?
Unfortunately, in a lot of restaurants, it was a salad.
Or pasta primavera.
Right.
You know, and
right.
This was, like, amazing thought of food. Actually, in the first meal, I didn't think about it. Was, I think it was a Thanksgiving meal. So it was everything you got. We moved there in October, end of October, and then went in November. And everything you got, you didn't care that you weren't eating your traditional Thanksgiving meal. And this was our first Thanksgiving away from all our families, too. You know, so it was kind of that one's in my head now. But then we, I mean, Skip, we ate lots of good food in the city. But then the first meal at Chez Panisse just knocked me on my socks. Like,
what did you eat?
I had pork loin with, let's see, the first course was stuffed squid with beans. Hers was a panade, which is like a savory bread pudding. Then we had a pork loin. I think this must have been a Monday night because it was three courses, and that was the less expensive at the time. Pork loin with braised greens of some manner. I just remember the pork, like the pork killed me.
Well, that's good. I mean, yeah. You can remember both you and your wife's.
I know. It's crazy. So that was the meal. That was it.
And when did it strike you to leave your investment job?
I mean, timeliness comes in so many forms. So my firm, I was with my first firm. We went through the dot-com bust, and I did fixed income, which was okay during the dot-com bust, but most of my firm was high tech, so it was not a grand time to be in finance or technology in San Francisco. We got through that. I actually changed jobs to an only fixed income bond firm, one I'd interviewed with right when I got out there and didn't get the job, but they called back and said, hey, we're growing a little bit, and you know, we like the interview. Would you want to come back in? So I started working with them, and that one was in San Francisco. Lots of things happened, but the firm was moving to Los Angeles, and we could move to Los Angeles with Kristen's job because she was promoted, and was traveling a lot. Or I can look for a new job. We can stay in San Francisco. We decided we wanted to stay in San Francisco. We loved it. And then I finally went to the culinary school for what, 9th or 10th time, and was like, hell with it, I'm doing it. I'm gonna quit. I'm gonna go. We're lucky.
That was California Culinary.
California Culinary Institute. We're smart. Let's do it. So I went, got all the stuff, went home, and we're like, what are we gonna do? Do you wanna move to LA? Whatever you wanna do. And I'm like, I don't think so. She's like, well, do you have any leads? So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go to culinary school. And she's like, okay. So, and she's like, you sure? So kind of like my parents, she was like, if you're sure, then do it. So we did it, and, you know, it was a good program, fun program. It opened the door to Chez Panisse, where I did a very, very long internship apprenticeship.
Okay, so we're going to stop there. We have to take a little break, and we'll be right back and hear about working at Chez Panisse, not eating at Chez Panisse. Yeah.
Today's program is brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm. Consider Bardwell Farm is a sustainable pasture-based dairy farm, making award-winning raw cow and goat's milk cheeses in a not-too-far corner of Vermont. For Consider Bardwell, sustainability means caring for the land, raising their animals well, reducing waste, and helping their community, all in the name of happy animals and people and delicious cheeses. Consider Bardwell Farm is proud to support Heritage Radio Network as part of their food and farming community and a proud sponsor of all good conversations had over great cheese. Find them at your local cheese counter, at New York City Green Markets, and online at ConsiderBardwellFarm.com.
Well, welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today my guest is Billy Allen from Cakes and Ale in Atlanta. And he also, this year, was chosen by Atlanta Magazine as the top chef of Atlanta. Is that correct?
Yeah, they did. They've been very generous. Top chef, number one restaurant. Lots of things.
Well, of 50 restaurants. I mean, you know, Atlanta is really quite a city, and that's an extraordinary honor. And for years and years and years, you're always a finalist on the James Beard Awards and lots of great stuff. I have to say I haven't eaten there. I want to eat there. That's why I have you up today, because I'm hoping I can get a reservation next time I'm in Atlanta. But getting back to
I know somebody now.
Okay, so we're gonna now go down to see. You've gone to culinary school. You got out. They gave you entree right to Chez Panisse. Huh?
Yeah. I went San Francisco, probably like New York and any major city with culinary schools. You have to go right away and try to get your internship or externship, they called it. So when I knew immediately that's where I wanted to go, but I tried several places just so let's see what happens. But that was the one. I mean, there's no question in my mind. So I went there, and we had a great night. I had two chefs at the time. They still had the co-chefs, Chris Lee and Kelsey Kerr. And I worked with Chris Lee that night, and everything went swimmingly well. He's like, great, you can do your internship. You know, it starts in 8 months. And I was like, well, that's great, but is there any way I can just come in and I'll do it any time you want me to do a night for you guys? He's like, well, you know, we have so many people in the kitchen, a lot of people visiting. It's tough to have too many hands, which in my mind doesn't make sense. But it was not a big kitchen, and you could get in your own way or at someone else's way. So I was like, that's fine.
They really had that many interns and people
coming out? Yeah,
they
would have a couple at a time sometimes, but then just people visiting and staging. And, you know, it was an amazing kitchen to be in. Like,
what made it amazing?
Just everyone there loved cooking. Everyone there loved eating. And it was all – they took everything away from – and simplified what it was all about, but on a high level. You know, it wasn't simple food. It was simplistic, I guess. Or it wasn't simplistic, it was simple food. And it just, everything tasted good. Like, I'd never eaten meat or vegetables that tasted so good in my life. And we ate well. Again, we ate at some of the good French restaurants or great French restaurants in New York, and Italian in New York, and everything was delicious, but nothing like this ever. And it may be I was born to do that type of cooking, I don't know, but it stuck to me. But I did other restaurants. I was like, fine, if I can't do it now, I'll just stage all during culinary school. And I got a call a couple weeks later, and Chris Lee's like, well, the intern we have right now is not working great. Do you want to start working Mondays? I was like, yeah, I'll work every Monday. So I started Mondays. About a week or two after that, they said, well, we have a problem with another intern. How many days can you work? I was like, I'll work 7 days. You just tell me. And they're like, well, we're only open six. So he's like, take five.
You have some work ethic.
You know? I'm sure. He's like, take five. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll take 5 days. So I worked Tuesday.
Was it a free internship?
Free internship this whole time. So almost a year worth.
So you worked there for free. So you had finished school by that time?
No, I hadn't finished school. It was during school. So I changed all my classes to morning so I could go nighttime and work there. So I would race out of there and take the train from San Francisco to Berkeley. And then I finally had a truck back in South Carolina that my dad and a friend of his for fun drove out and brought to me. So when I finally got that, because we had my wife's company car at the time, which we were 25-year-olds driving around San Francisco in a minivan, which was fun. But it was fun when you could get everyone in it and go to Napa or Sonoma or wherever. But I finally, because I could get there faster if I drove.
Sure.
So I was like, I'm going to start driving, even though we had lived years taking the train only.
So was Alice in the kitchen? Mm-hmm. How much does she have on
She's the most amazing taster. Her palate is absurd. She would just come in if she hadn't been there all day or in the kitchen all day, she'd come in, taste something, and say, this needs, not literally, but the smallest amount of nutmeg, one grate. And you're like, one grate? And they do one grate, and sure enough, it tasted better, you know, as an example. Just an amazing palate, you know? I mean, you can't teach that. That's
no.
just part of it.
Right.
Know? When you taste something...
So what was the esprit de corps in the kitchen at Chez Panisse? What made it so special?
This, how people look at food, it was... this wasn't about cooking food in the traditional restaurant sense. So it's a business, and you have to run it like a business. This was cooking food to give people to share. And that's with the downstairs restaurant. It was one menu. So it was a family meal in the sense that everyone ate the same thing unless there was a slight modification like vegetarian. You know, so it was a family shared dinner, just plated separately. Mm-hmm. And that's the strength of food. Food mm-hmm. is, to me, not about showing off. And mm-hmm. eating there wasn't about the cook showing off. It was mm-hmm. about cooking good food, mm-hmm. something that tasted really good, was cooked properly, you know, was came from the right source. And that's the
so
amazing
that,
thing.
So that has really, that's resonated with
yeah.
you, and it's your yeah. it's your mantra mission.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so
going to the farmer's market there is in San Francisco was an eye-opener as well.
Yeah. You know, it led the way. But so tell me what your journey was to get to Atlanta and Cakes and Ale.
All right. So we did Chez Panisse. I did that for approximately a year. Then my internship was over, and I talked to the chefs there, Chris Lee in particular, and he said, you know, you can go upstairs and work in the upstairs kitchen. You know, you're going to have to take a few steps back to do it because they have their own system, but you've gotten through our program. I think you should just go cook there. Or because you're in general older than most at that time, I think I was 29 years old when I finished it. He's like, you should do something different. Maybe you should go somewhere that like you see what running a busy restaurant, like a really busy restaurant, is all about. So I took his advice, and again, Kristen's job, she was traveling, so she could live anywhere, and we were like, well, the hell, let's move to Napa. So we moved to Napa for a year, and I worked for just under a year as a line cook at a restaurant called Martini House with Chef Todd
Is
Humphreys.
Is that Pat Colletto?
Pat Colletto owned the building. It's no longer open, unfortunately, but amazing food, like really delicious, well-prepared, super high-end food, but on a summer night in Napa Valley, you would serve 550 people.
So oh my gosh!
You learned how to bust your ass and move, and that's really been invaluable in how, you know, we're a restaurant. We take great pride in our food, and we want to cook it the best we can, but we also have to put it out in a timely manner.
Right.
We don't have the Chez Panisse model downstairs where it's one menu.
Mm-hmm.
We have to cook and get food to people in a timely manner, and you had to do it there.
Right.
550 people, 600 people on a Saturday night was...
Did you, at this stage, or even when you were in cooking school, were you saying, I want to have my own restaurant?
I don't think I ever really thought about it, you know? I was just living in the moment. We had fun, Napa, we just were having a ball. You know, Kristen was traveling a lot, but I was working a lot, and then she would take every Sunday, Monday off when I was off, and we would enjoy Napa. She then eventually quit her job and started working in a winery. and so she was bit by
the wine,
you know, maybe I want to do something different
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So she started working in a winery. So every Monday she had to work there, and we'd gotten pregnant. She had gotten pregnant.
I like the we.
We, I know, we. She did by me. Yeah. And she worked at a winery, and it was going into the fall, and they were building fires. And like everyone, she'd make the fire. She made a great fire, but she's getting more and more pregnant. They didn't want her, like, the winery, they're like, you do what you want to do. So she'd carry cases, and I'd go in on a Monday and hang out with them. And the guests would be like, no, you can't carry that. And she's like, it's okay. But, you know, I was just working every chance I had. I mean, a normal shift was long there. We worked 10-hour shifts every day of the week, and it was a very busy busy place.
So how long were you there?
Just under a year. Mm-hmm. And then we got so pregnant, we're like, we can't stay here. So it was time to move at about eight months.
And where'd you move to?
We moved to Atlanta. So that's how we got back
that's,
to Atlanta.
That's a pretty big thing to do when you're 8 months pregnant, yeah. I will say. Yeah. Well, move cross country.
She flew back.
Was she lifting any boxes?
She moved the whole. She moved everything. No. No, we. She flew back. I waited. I had one more week to.
Why Atlanta?
One more week. Her family's from Atlanta.
Okay.
So we had family, and that was the. That was Atlanta, and I called again. Chris Lee clearly comes into play a lot. I called him and said, "I'm moving back to Atlanta. Tell me what you know." And he goes, "I know two chefs there only. Ann Quattrano and Scott Peacock." It's like, those are the two to go talk to. So when I got back, I talked to them both, and I started working with Scott at Watershed.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Chef's Story, and today my guest is Billy Allen from Cakes and Ale in Atlanta, Georgia. And we just, in the story, got to Atlanta. So, Billy, how, you know, you started working with Scott Peacock, and what, I mean, Scott does Southern food, right? And so now you're coming from California with the Alice Chez Panisse model, and you're cooking with Scott, and it's your roots in a sense. Mm-hmm. So what was that like?
It simplified Southern cooking in a way. It didn't, again, it's not simplistic. It just simplified what it is. It's about building flavors and layers of flavors to make it taste good. So the Southern food I grew up eating, I thought it was delicious, amazing Southern food. But not until I worked in with him and ate his food did I realize how good Southern food is. And it's not incredibly salty, and it's not incredibly fatty. It's clean, fresh food that, you know, has its own heritage, yes, but it has its own direction, you know. And I'd never seen that before, so it was a big eye-opener. He's a huge influence on what we do now. I don't really cook a lot of Southern food now. There's some influences once in a while, but sometimes the Southern food I remember him making and some of the things I remember eating growing up are pretty similar. Long-cooked green beans, especially the end-of-the-season green beans. Very similar to what I ate growing up, and I can remember eating those green beans growing up, and I remember him saying, okay, we're going to cook green beans now. Let me show you the Southern green beans, or here's the recipe for the green beans. And it resonated a lot, you know, how close my Northern Italian, well, actually I'm a mutt of all kinds, but influenced by New York Italian. Actually, wow, it's in the South too. It's no different, you know. It's about getting the food and cooking it the way it wants to be cooked, you know.
So what was the momentum to start your own restaurant?
I was there for almost 3 years, and at Decatur, where we lived, didn't have anything. Like, we had finally thought maybe about a year before I was to quit, maybe we should do our own thing. Atlanta doesn't have what we do. We have Ann Quattrano, who is doing, you know, farm to table type cooking. But there's not a ton of farmers at the time. There's actually a lot of farming around Atlanta, but not a lot of restaurants using that. You had Ann Quattrano using it, Gunter Seeger at the time using it, but not much more. And so to do something really straightforward, really casual, really good, but use the best ingredients we can find in Atlanta was like, let's do it that way. And there's marketing behind it, but in general, it was just what I was taught to do. So we just decided it's time to do it, and let's find a small place. And I quit, and we took about 6 months off, did a little bit of traveling, trying to say, what do we want it to be? You know, we needed a concept, not for concept's sake, but a concept to help us figure out what we wanted to do. We didn't want to go into it again, we were trained not to go into something, go, maybe this, maybe that. This is be focused in a way on what you're doing. So it's always hard for me to explain what we do, even though we're very focused in what we were doing. So we built the restaurant, a little 38-seat restaurant with eight bar stools.
And your wife, who's your partner?
And she's she and I.
And she worked the front of the house?
She did front of the house, books, kept me focused, did it all. And I did the kitchen and the wine and all the beverage and ordering.
What was your first menu?
Oh, gosh, we actually have it on the wall. It's very small by Atlanta standards at the time, but we had five entrees. One was a burger, which was a very good burger, actually a very delicious burger, but I've never been one to keep menu items on for a long time. Mm-hmm. Burger, roasted chicken, fish with braised greens and potatoes and mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. What else did we have? Gnocchi with pork ragu. And I'm sad I can't remember the last dish. There was one more on the main
course.
It was five entrees and four starters.
So who discovered you? Was it the neighborhood? Was it the food?
It was the neighborhood. Decatur is a great place to live. We moved there. We knew that's where we wanted to live. And this was just supposed to be a neighborhood restaurant. And we opened it. And very quickly, people came on board. And I wasn't ready for it. About 3 weeks into it, we got the first busy night of all nights. And actually, I'll give you a funny story to start. The night we opened, we had a friend through the Southern Foodways Alliance, and he said, when you open, I'm going to bring some people in, we're going to have dinner with you. And I was like, okay, how many people, who's it going to be? Tell me. He's like, we're just going to show up. So the day before he calls, he goes, we have about 12 people. I was like, 12 people? And it was myself, another cook, and our pastry chef in the kitchen, and my dad was washing dishes at the time. For us.
banker of New York to dishwasher, chief cook and bottle washer.
I'm like, okay. He's like, but I'm going to have to do it family style. I can't cook all this food. We didn't know what the first night was going to be. Mm. So about an hour before we open, we get a call from my mom, who is watching our
child,
our firstborn. And we had both kids at the time. But our firstborn, and she's like, he was playing, he fell, and he hit his head. So we're like, so they bring him up there, and he has a little crack in his head, and he's bleeding. And so we're like, we got to take him to the
hospital.
And he wants his mommy. So
yeah.
So Kristen took him to the hospital, and so our
first
night
this
open,
opening
my
night?
Only partner, our host, is gone. And I'm like, okay,
oh my gosh,
we're gonna make it. So so Mike shows up with his friends, and it happens to be some people of notoriety before, but some that became. It's Hugh Atchison, Mike Lotta, and
Sean
Brock.
Oh no, this is like the all stars.
And I'm like, what are you doing?
On your opening night, all of them should be horsewhipped.
I know.
Really? That's not fair, guys.
What are you doing? He's like, we might as well go big. And I was like, okay. So we gave him the family meal. They all seemed to enjoy it. They said so. We became friends with all of them after the meal, and a couple food writers and other chefs from Atlanta. And so that was my first night. Outside of that 12 or so people, we only did another 25 people. So it was actually pretty easy. And I was like, that was the hardest night of my life. But about 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later, so by the third week, people had started coming in. Again, the food was really simple.
Uh-huh.
But I made sure I was getting the best. The night we opened, I went to our local farmer's market. We had like three farmers there.
Mm.
Bobby Britt. I go to this guy, crazy farmer. And I'm like, what do you have? He's like, oh, I got this bag of kale. And I was like, I want it all. He's like, okay, how much will you pay for it? I was like, well, how much do you charge for it? And he said, I don't know. No one's bought a bag of kale. Like a huge trash bag of kale. So I buy all his white Russian kale. That's the first thing I buy. And then, the next Saturday I go to another farmer's market and I load up for my week. And so we started buying that way because no farmers then, they weren't big enough to sell to people they didn't really know. And it was too much of a risk, not because of reputation, but they didn't have a lot. So they wanted to make sure, like, is it a relationship we want? And finally, over time, I proved myself, I guess, to the farmers, which I'm glad that's how it worked. I think it's the right way. And it started, they would come and deliver to me, and we were building that. So by the third or fourth week, we have our first really busy night, and more people and I know what to do with it.
Was this all word of mouth?
It was all word of mouth. We had done very little PR, no PR actually, nothing. I mean, a little bit here and there, and I was cooking chickens because I was doing a half a roasted chicken, which took 30 minutes in the oven. I was running out of pans. Everyone was ordering it. Gnocchi, I had made gnocchi enough that night, what I thought we'd get through in the middle of the night. I'm cooking and rolling gnocchi on our back table, trying to finish it so we don't run out of food, because I thought if I run out of food, everyone's going to be so mad. So I've got to make gnocchi while we're doing it. I'm cooking food, and I was on my knees cooking, and I'm like to my wife, I'm like, can we just stop? She's like, well, we'll stop, but we have like 8 people waiting. I was like, just do that. So like around 9:30, we just pull the plug because I'm done. And the guy I had hired to cook with me was not working out very well.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was me by myself and our pastry chef who's doing pantry at the time. And by that time, I had hired who's one of my right-hand men now, Julio, who I worked with at Watershed. I hired at Watershed as a prep cook. Mm-hmm. And he came over and he was doing dishes and prep with us. And I was teaching him on the fly how to roll gnocchi because I was back there. I'm rolling. He's rolling. We're trying to just make enough so we can get through the night. Or somewhere close through the night, because when you only have like 10 things on a menu, it's like if you run out, people are not happy. Now I don't care. When you run out, you run out. I can only make so much of something that maybe I've planned it. Maybe I can only get so much of something, and I want people that come in early to, you know, try it. And if it's out, it's out. But back then, I was worried about it.
Well, so how did the I like asking chefs this. Why you have 4 locations now? How did they evolve? And you know, if you had a lot on your plate in cooking there, what gave you the momentum to open 3 new
when
places?
When we moved from the first Cakes and Ale, it was basically we didn't want to just move to grow. We wanted to do a little bit more than we could do in the kitchen we were in and the building we were in. So we moved to the new location. It was actually, we had looked at this location for the first place that we were like Cakes and Ale, but the landlord is like, I don't know who you are or what you do. I don't know if I can put any money into this idea I know nothing about. So he then heard through the city planners that we had said maybe we'd move, and he came to us and said, hey, we want to develop this spot in Decatur, and you know, maybe you guys can partner with us. So we're like, let's do it. So we opened Cakes and Ale with an adjacent cafe / bakery or bake shop, and you know, over time people kind of came and went from the bake shop, but we ended up with a really good crew, and we always have been big at Cakes and Ale about developing talent. Like it's I have nothing at the end of this except the people I've helped do something for, you know, and that's teach them how to cook, in my opinion, good food. And people don't leave. We always had a reputation, even in, especially front of the house, it's like, why apply to Cakes and Ale? No one ever leaves. So I was like, that's the best
that's rare in the restaurant
industry,
you know? Too.
So as we got bigger, though, things maybe go a little faster, and we do. But in the kitchen, we're very good about retaining cooks and good coworkers. And so when we had built this cafe, we finally got it going. The bake shop was doing well, and they really outgrew what we had in the kitchen. We did not open a big kitchen for the bake shop, but we weren't planning big. We were planning small. But the cafe was very busy, and we couldn't keep up with production between the restaurant and the cafe. So opportunity to open Proof came about at a really well-known soul food restaurant called Sun's Place. And it was that, and then a vegan bakery, which didn't work out, and then we moved in.
So it did have a lot of the equipment that you needed?
It did, but it was not in great shape. So we had to redo it. We just made it look nice. It was it's not a fancy bake shop, but they do a really good job. And we've always, since we opened, made not everything from scratch in the sense of what comes in the kitchen, but we've done all baked goods from scratch.
So where did Bread and Butterfly come from?
So Bread and Butterfly is the third business. So, again, we had great staff, and you know, we had this idea of we wanted a cafe like Atlanta doesn't have, a place that you can go to from morning till night, eat and drink and just hang out. And we wanted that. So, and it's not a, we do have dinner menu items, I would say, but it's not a dinner menu like a normal restaurant.
So how many people do you have working for you now?
We've roughly 60 people, all said.
All said. So how much time do you spend?
I spend most of my time still at Cakes and Ale. That's our baby.
And how many covers do you do a night?
Anywhere between on weeknights, 60 and 70. It's an 80-seat restaurant. And on weekends, up to 180, which is where the Martini House thing comes into play.
Right.
Keep the level high, but you have to get the food out. So I think we run a good system as far as that goes. And we've been committed from the beginning. And we haven't changed at all of our restaurants, especially when it comes to produce, about finding the best local produce or the best purveyors.
We don't have a lot of time left, okay. But I want to ask you, what's your philosophy? What's your secret to success? What do you think has been...
I'm just true to what I do. We don't try to shadow it. We uncover and show the ingredients that we're getting, and we want them to shine. And it's for a lot of reasons. I feel like it's respectful to the farmer. It's respectful to the person eating the food. I just want life, as I get older, I just want my life to be simple. And clearly opening a bunch of restaurants, that's not going to happen. But what we're giving people should be really simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. And if you do it with integrity, I think you're rewarded as an owner and as a chef. And the people I work with, the fact that they stick around and they want to grow with us, I think is testament that we've opened the door to a way of eating in Atlanta, you know, not to point the finger just as us and say, look at us, but a way of eating in Atlanta that is still relatively new.
The farm to table.
Farm to table. It's become a sales pitch now versus, a de facto thing. And we've stayed de facto from the beginning, and we want it going forward. We're not going to change that in any way. And all of our restaurants, I think, do that. And it's really about the enjoyment of going out and eating and dining. You know, it's not a show. We don't want it to be a show. We want it to be about everyone there, from the kitchen to the staff to the people eating. It's a relationship type thing.
One last question. Mm-hmm. I understand the term Cakes and Ale comes from Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. How did you decide on that?
See, it's a great... Kristen's smart. We're like, what would we call a restaurant? There has to be a reason. There cannot be... We just can't pick out a name. That's not us. So she just did a bunch of reading and research, and we had talked about... We want to give people what we think is good, and that's what any business is I'm giving you something that I think is the right thing. So the good things in life, she Googled the good things in life, and sure enough, Cakes and Ale came up, and we're like, we love it. You know, we're not British, but who cares? It's not a British restaurant. You know? But we stuck with the theme with Bread and Butterfly. That's from Lewis Carroll, Through the Looking Glass. And we wanted this cafe to be kind of whimsical looking and someplace a little different. And we're like, this one is a little easier in a way. It's like, what story's more crazy and whimsical than Alice in Wonderland? And so that one she found pretty quick.
So last question. Would you recommend to your kids to go into the restaurant business?
I want them just to figure out what they want to do and do it with everything they have. That's the important part.
Well, thank you. I think that's great advice. Billy, I can't wait to get down to Atlanta and Cakes and Ale. Okay. Thanks. And I want to do a shout out to Robin Cohen and Jack Inslee, our producers. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.